United States versus Lubich.
Morning. May it please the Court, Chief Judge Baker. My name is Lieutenant Kevin Quincer, and I am counsel for the appellant. I would like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Please.
The computerized data that formed the cornerstone of the government's case was located, retrieved, and compiled by an unknown person with unknown qualifications using an unknown process with unknown safeguards and unknown accuracy and reliability. This court should set aside the appellant's convictions for three reasons. First, because of the unique accuracy and reliability concerns of computerized data evidence, the courts have held that the proponent of that evidence must demonstrate a reasonable probability that the process that created those documents is reliable and accurate. Second, the incomplete and secondhand testimony of Special Agent Schmidt was insufficient to meet that burden. And third, because the government failed to meet that burden, the military judge abused her discretion when she admitted Prosecution Exhibits 19 and 23 and erred again when she did not require the government to place the authentication evidence in front of the members, as they are the ultimate trier of fact.
Is this a 901 authentication case?
It is, Your Honor.
So should we look to Rule 901 to determine?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Judge Baker.
So we're asking ourselves whether there's evidence sufficient to support a finding that the matter in question is what its proponent claims, correct?
That is correct.
That's the test we should be applying.
That and the illustration of 901B9, Your Honor, which is that the processor system that created that document is...
Now, 9 is one of 9 choices which are not exhaustive.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Why in this case isn't 4 relevant? Distinctive characteristics and the like, where we're dealing with email that has the distinctive characteristic of having the appellant's name all over the cookies and all over the other thing, to use the technical term of art.
Chief Judge Baker, I think that there are distinct differences between the ordinary examples that are used under 901B4, distinguishing characteristics like email or text messages, where it is authenticated by perhaps the email address that it was sent from being the person in question, or the screen name of the person who wrote the text message being the author. Here you have a computerized generated document, which was not necessarily authored by the appellant. And if you look to Lorraine v. Markle, it states that in cases where there is computerized generated evidence, the appropriate standard is 901B9, demonstrate that the processor system is reliable or accurate. Furthermore, one modern court has stated that the accuracy of this kind of data can be impaired by incomplete data entry, programming errors, data and contamination of storage media problems. And
well, that goes to weight, doesn't it?
Your Honor, they can absolutely go to weight. However, there needs to be a predicate determination.
Right. We're talking about laying a foundation here, but you're talking about data entry errors and all that, and that really goes to weight, not admissibility, doesn't it?
Well, the courts have held that with this kind of evidence, there are unique accuracy and reliability concerns with the computerized data evidence, which is why the burden for the authentication of these documents is not simply that it is what the proponent claims that it is, say that this is a printout handed to me on a disk from NMCI, but also goes slightly beyond that in providing some, and the burden is correct, you are correct, Your Honor, it's not high. However, they must provide some evidence that there's a reasonable probability that this document was created by an accurate or reliable process. It's an issue
but
of conditional.
But if it is what it's supposed, if it is what they say it is, which is they say that it's document on the CD-ROM that NMCI, right, docked through a search, and if they show that that's correct, right, how have they not shown that it was an accurate system? I mean, what is it that you think that they need to show that they didn't show? And how does it make it more or less likely that this data is from her computer, which the defense counsel himself acknowledged?
Judge Ryan, I think that the government did, in fact, lay the foundation for this being a document from NMCI. But it is important that the government also show that the process that created it is reliably accurate. And the reason for that is, without that accuracy and reliability, it may not be relevant. And the members need to know the provenance of this document so that they can properly weigh its...
Well, the defense counsel said someone in NMCI, I don't know who, pulled the data up essentially from all her computers in her personal profile data, burned it to the CD, and provided it to NCIS. And he says, it's my understanding that the data that Mr. Schmidt analyzed came from Petty Officer LeBoux's computers at NSAWC. I mean, I don't think there's any dispute about that. What more do you want? I mean, and also, what do you do about the fact that the defense counsel, in terms of all these problems that you're saying with the system and the process, didn't exploit that on cross-examination really at all?
Just right, I have two answers to your question. First, the defense counsel did point out during the 39A, outside of the presence of the members, that he had significant concerns with the manner in which it had been produced and that he didn't understand the process and that Special Agent Schmidt couldn't testify to that process. I think, moreover, defense counsel didn't have the opportunity to cross Special Agent Schmidt on the provenance of these documents or the reliability of them because he didn't know. And any question that they asked, Special Agent Schmidt, can you testify as to the reliability of these documents? The answer would be calling for hearsay because the basis of his knowledge came from phone calls that he had.
So you don't think you could have asked questions? You don't personally know how any of this data was retrieved. You weren't there. You don't even know what the systems were, do you, Special Agent? He couldn't have asked questions like that?
Judge Ryan, he absolutely could have. There's no question that he could have. However, it's not clear that Special Agent Schmidt would have been able to adequately answer those questions other than to say, I simply don't know. And that ignores the requirements the military judge make the predicate determination that the evidence is, in fact, over the 901 hurdle. Moreover, the members never had the opportunity to be presented with the deficient, if sufficient in a legal sense, with the deficient authentication evidence, because they never heard that this was authenticated by someone who didn't fully understand the process, had not actually conducted the process.
Well, whose fault is that?
It's the fault of the government here.
No, if he's made a prima facie showing to meet 901, right, then the burden is on the defense. If he wants to say, well, but it's still not authentic and it's not good enough, that's what cross-examination is for, counsel.
Yes, Your Honor, but if you look at the record, all of the evidence adduced on the question of authentication was adduced at a 39A session outside the presence of the members.
And I'll say again, whose fault is that? It's the defense's fault.
Lorraine V. Markle states that it's the government's burden to present
a prima facie showing sufficient to meet 901. It's not a very heavy burden.
Yes, Your Honor, but he must do that not only in front of a military judge, but also in front of the members. And appellant contends that this was not done in front of the members at all.
Counsel, now I'm confused. You say they laid the foundation to show that the thing came from NMCI. Okay. I thought your problem with this was that they didn't show it came from the appellant.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Because you seem to be going off somewhere else that leaves me scratching my head.
So okay. Is this a chain of custody issue?
It could be part of the broader authentication problem.
Well, could be, or where are we? Is this an issue in which the government has failed to show that the data introduced at trial came from appellant?
Yes, Your Honor. If you look to United States v. Harris, the court in a video camera type case stated that three things should be shown to authenticate the video camera evidence. First, that the video camera system was reliable. Second, that the video camera system was in working order. And third, that the data had been safeguarded since its extraction from the video camera until the time of trial. Here you have no testimony as to what happened to the data from its extraction point until it gets to the hands of Special Agent Schmidt.
And did the defense object on chain of custody grounds at trial?
The answer to that is no, not specifically. They did object on authentication grounds, Your Honor.
Well, is a general objection on authentication sufficient to draw the attention of the judge to the problem of chain of custody in a case like this, particularly where, as the earlier questions have indicated, we have a situation in which the defense seemed to concede that the data came from NMCI from the appellant's computer?
I think there's no question that the primary thrust of the defense's objection at trial was on the questions related to the process and system that created the document.
And have you raised chain of custody here on appeal?
Yes, Your Honor.
And where do you say chain of custody in the brief?
It's contained within United States v. Harris. It's contained within the broader authentication questions, Your Honor. It's not specifically addressed in a separate section.
Did the defense object on hearsay grounds?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. They didn't object on hearsay. They didn't object on chain of custody. As Judge Ryan points out, they barely probed this at all in cross-examination. They seem to have just sort of conceded the whole thing, or, to use another metaphor, kicked the can down the road. What are we doing here?
Your Honor, I think the defense's position is simply that while the defense did, in fact, at trial, significantly probe the questions regarding the knowledge of Special Agent Schmidt, once the military
Wasn't the whole problem that the knowledge was all hearsay? He got it off from some unknown person on the phone.
That is the problem.
He would be testifying as to what he heard on the phone.
That is the problem, Your Honor. That's why he couldn't authenticate in front of the members. That is absolutely correct.
Okay, well, and so, but they didn't choose to object on those grounds.
They did before 39A, Your Honor, and they objected off the authentication grounds then and went into an extensive 39A on the subject. They didn't later object again.
They didn't object on hearsay grounds.
No, Your Honor. They never objected on hearsay grounds.
Okay. So the issue's waived.
The hearsay issue is waived, Your Honor.
Okay.
If you look to the standard delineated by the lower court, which appellant believes they got correct, they stated not only must the government demonstrate that it is what it purports to be and that it is a printout from NMCI, but that they must take the next step, that is to authenticate the process or the system.
Counsel, in that regard, the advisory committee notes for the parallel federal rule, 901, federal rule 901B9, state, in general, electronic documents or records that are merely stored in a computer raise no computer-specific authentication issues. If a computer processes data rather than merely storing it, authentication issues may arise. So in this case, has the defense made a showing that in this case there is processing rather than storage at issue?
Senior Judge Efron, I think I have three responses to your question. I think first, the burden is on the government to demonstrate that it is in fact authentic. Second, this is a computer-generated document, although we don't have anything in the record that demonstrates precisely the process other than the guess of Special Agent Schmidt during the 39A. This was a computer-generated document in that it's clear that someone had to locate, retrieve, and then compile the data. This isn't simply a telephone records case where the data is automatically stored in a computer record or something where you, like, have a computerized record of your medical records or something like that. This was something where the computer actively had to go out, locate, retrieve, compile the data, do that accurately, put that into a document that was accurate and reliable, and then you have the document that the government has.
Counsel, do you disagree with what the special agent testified to, that the system that was used is an automated system, that information, that words are inputted, and that it's an automated system from then on?
Judge Ryan, if you look to the joint appendix at page 29, it becomes clear that his understanding is limited at best and that the answer to the automated question.
But I'm asking you, do you disagree that it's an automated process?
I have no personal knowledge of the process used by NMCI, Your Honor. And the record does not reflect what precise process they used. His answer to the question was, didn't there have to be some sort of human interaction in this process? Didn't a human have to actually locate, retrieve, and compile this data? Didn't a human actually have to input that? Didn't a human actually have to decide what computers were involved here? And his answer to that question was...
Didn't he answer that wasn't it clear from the gist of his testimony that they need to put in the person's NMCI username?
That was the gist of his testimony. However, on...
Do you disagree with that? Or are you going to tell me you don't have any personal knowledge again?
I don't have any personal knowledge as to the process that NMCI used in this case, and the record doesn't reflect that. I mean, his answer to the question of how much do you know about this was, I don't know much beyond what I was told over the phone.
And what about the fact that he's been working in this area for 7 years? Should we discount that also?
No, Your Honor. I think when a court makes a case-by-case determination of authentication, they would absolutely consider that. But it's also clear from the record that he was not familiar with the software. that he had never worked at NMCI, that he'd never worked with the software that was used in this case, and had never conducted this type of process before. In Ree v. Benhe, a bankruptcy court, appellate court case out of the Ninth Circuit, the court delineated an 11-part test for the admission of computerized data evidence. It included several factors, including that the computer is reliable, that there are procedures for the input of the data, that there are safeguards to ensure the accuracy and identify any errors, and that the computer is in good working order. In analogous type cases, in People v. Illinois, the Supreme Court of Illinois stated, the dispositive question in every case including authentication evidence like this is whether or not the process was reliable and accurate. Furthermore, the Second Circuit in United States v. Morrison has stated that recorded evidence, like the recorded evidence in this case, can have a powerful effect on the members. And the powerful effect that it had on the members is clear. This is an official-looking document submitted by the government without any evidence of authentication in front of the members, discounting the 39M, that purports to show the appellant's guilt. Additionally, Lorraine v. Markle has also demonstrated that there must be a two-step process. First, where the judge makes the initial predicate determination as to the admissibility of the evidence. But second, that the government must also put that evidence in front of the members so that they themselves, as the ultimate trier of fact, can make the determination as to whether or not the evidence is reliable. Because the government did not do that, the military judge erred when she did not require the government to lay the appropriate predicate foundation in front of the members. Turning to prejudice, the burden is on the government to demonstrate that the error did not have a substantial influence on the findings. During the opening argument, the closing argument, and if you look at Appellate Exhibit 36, which was a slideshow that the trial counsel showed during his closing argument, it is clear that references to Prosecution Exhibits 19 and 23 and the data contained therein formed the cornerstone of the government's case. The trial counsel concluded his argument at Joint Appendix 66, stating that Prosecution Exhibit 23 demonstrated that the appellant was guilty and that that exhibit did not lie. There are no further questions from the court.
I thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court, my name is Major William Kirby, and I, along with Colonel Stephen Newman, represent the United States. This court does not need to issue a heightened authentication standard for computer-generated data. Instead, it only needs to determine that the military judge did not abuse her discretion in admitting Prosecution's Exhibit 19 and 23. This court will see that the military judge did not abuse her discretion for the following two reasons. The evidence in the record shows that Prosecution Exhibits 19 and 23 are exactly what they purport to be. An internet history for an NMCI user account entitled Heather.Lubich. And two, Mr. Schmidt was generally familiar with the process used by NMCI. The military judge enjoys broad discretion in excluding or admitting evidence. Indeed, in this case, it's only necessary that the evidence being admitted be reasonably probable that it was authenticated properly, or that it was what it purports to be. In this case, the military judge, after hearing the evidence, listening to Mr. Schmidt's testimony, looking at Prosecution Exhibits 19 and 23, she more than met that low threshold. Going straight to the issue here, the question is, was Mr. Schmidt generally familiar with the NMCI collection?
Counsel, does it make any, all this stuff happened in a 39A out of the hearing of the members. Does it make any difference that what authentication evidence there is, the members never heard?
Your Honor, no. There was authentication evidence heard prior to the 39A session.
And then what?
Say again, sir?
What?
Mr. Schmidt testified as to what it was that he was trying to submit, and then there was an objection lobbied, stating from the defense specifically.
Mr. Schmidt said, here's something,
Yes, sir.
Object 39A. Yes, that's sir. All they heard.
Yes, sir. And it's the government's position that it does not make a difference. The fact is that the evidence, the authentication evidence, was laid out before the military judge. The question here is, did the military judge abuse her discretion in allowing that information or that those prosecution exhibits to be admitted? And the answer to that question here, Your Honor, is no. She did not abuse her discretion in allowing those documents to be authenticated.
I think Judge Stuckey raised a different question that the defense raised, and that is, assuming that the judge was correct in allowing this evidence to go to the members, in terms of would have been correct in allowing the evidence to go to the members, was it error for the judge to keep all that evidence in the out-of-court Article 39A session rather than have it presented to the members?
No, Your Honor. The appellant had the opportunity to cross-examine to vet the reliability of that evidence.
Well, who's got the burden?
The government has the burden to authenticate it.
Right. And here the authentication evidence never got the members. That's the government's burden, not that you're saying, well, they could have crossed. Well, they could have done a ton of things, but that's not their burden. It's yours.
Yes, Your Honor. However, it's the government's position that although the evidence did not go, a great deal of evidence did not go before the members.
It sounds to me like none of it did. He said, here's something from MACI, NMCI, objection, and end of members.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So none of it went. The members didn't know diddly squat except that the judge let this in.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
However,
how could they weigh anything about the weight to be given this evidence or anything when they didn't know anything?
Your Honor, the government respectfully disagrees. The evidence was actually, it was cross-examined. It was discussed in front of the members what it was, what it was meant to be. And, of course, the defense had the opportunity to cross-examine, and evidence regarding this information did come before the members.
Yeah, here's something I've let in. Look at it.
Yes, Your Honor. And at the end of the day, the government agrees that a great deal of authentication evidence did not go before the members. However, it's the position of the government that it was not.
It's the position of the government that it doesn't have to.
Yes, Your Honor.
What specific authentication evidence went before the members?
Your Honor, the government offers that, there's not a great deal of evidence that went before the members.
Well, let's try to get a little bit above the foxhole here. How much is not a great deal?
Well, the members
start by identifying some.
Yes, sir. So the members knew that NMCI gave this information to NCIS, so they're familiar with NMCI. The members also are familiar with, assumably, the members are familiar with NMCI because it was internet history that was presented to the members. The members are also military members, so they are familiar with NMCI and the process of using your CAT card to access your user account.
Counsel, who is responsible at a trial for determining whether or not an exhibit is authentic under 901?
Oh, that's the government's burden.
No, who is responsible in the courtroom? Is it the judge or is it the members?
It's the judge, Your Honor.
Okay, so once the judge makes an authentication determination, what business is that of the members to hear the same evidence?
Your Honor, I believe that it was sufficient for the military judge to authenticate.
Well, I mean, not only under 901, but under 104, right? I mean,
yes,
it's ordinarily for the military judge, which doesn't mean that the defense can't attack the authenticity.
Yes, Your Honor. Again, the position of the government is that the military judge properly authenticated and allowed this information to come before the members. And of course, as I stated earlier, Your Honor, at that point, the members can hear cross-examination and the attack from the defense regarding the authenticity of the prosecution exhibits.
Is the hearsay issue waived?
Yes, Your Honor. There was no hearsay issue. There was no objection at trial.
Well, there certainly was a hearsay issue, but there was no objection.
There was no objection, Your Honor. In addition to that,
so the fact that all this he got from some unnamed person on the phone really is irrelevant.
It's irrelevant, Your Honor, but also looking at Garces, it shows that when a witness discusses the process for collecting data, he does not need to be personally or intimately familiar with that data.
Isn't Garces a business record case?
It was a business record case.
Is this a business record?
No, Your Honor.
You're not putting it in under 8036?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, then what's the relevance of Garces?
Well, in the Coyer case that Garces cites to, the relevance is
the which?
Coyer.
Okay.
Yes, sir. In that case, the government looked to an assistant manager in a fraud department testifying regarding sales tickets. Again, looking at the fact pattern regarding authentication, again, we have a manager.
Didn't the manager and Coyer know an awful lot more about the process than the special agent here?
Well, Your Honor, the government offers that the special agent, contrary to the appellant's position, the special agent did know. He had at least a general familiarity with the process. He specifically testified that NCI, he over the last 7 years, he's been a cyber forensics analyst, and he's worked with NCI, and in that process, a request is sent to NMCI. NMCI then processes what they do is they type into a computer the user data or the username, and then from there, a script runs, which is an automated process which goes to the server logs. The server logs identify which computers the appellant actually utilized. It goes to the folders on those computers. It pulls the cookie history and the anti-user data history, and then that information is populated on the information assurance officer's computer. And then all he does is click a button that saves that data to a disk. That is the process. That's what the agent testified to. That is a general familiarity. It's not an intimate familiarity. It's not a personal familiarity, but it is a general familiarity. And this court in Garces said that is all that is required. Moving on, Your Honor. When you look at, that's regarding the process, but when you also look at the documents themselves, Prosecution Exhibits 19 and 23, again, Judge Baker made the point, throughout the entire documents, you see the name Heather Lubich appear. It's repeated. We have an NCIS forensic analyst who has seen these documents throughout, presumably has seen these documents throughout his experience. And of course, he is able to look at those documents, and under 901, Bravo 4, in addition to 901 Bravo 1, and then of course testimony regarding the process for Bravo 9, the military judge can take all those factors together, weigh her in her discretion that the evidence was exactly what it purported to be, and from there decide that it should be admitted and not excluded. In conclusion, Your Honor, the military judge did not abuse her discretion in accepting and allowing the prosecution's exhibits 19 and 23 to be authenticated. If there are no further questions, that is all for the government.
Thank you, counsel. We now have rebuttal.
Chief Judge Baker, in contrast to the authentication evidence laid in this case, I'd like to direct your attention to cases in which authentication evidence was in fact sufficient.
Counsel, is this about whether the military judge abused her discretion or not? Is that the question?
Yes, Your Honor. It is about whether or not the military judge abused her discretion. If you look to United States v. Harris, the government laid a model foundation in which it brought two witnesses from the bank in question where the video camera was located who testified that the bank video camera was in fact in good working order, was reliable, and they also admitted a logbook that documented the maintenance and working records of the video camera. In Morrison, the telephone records custodian was familiar with the system in question, described the process, and established that the system was reliable. He also worked at the company in question. In Lundy, a text message case, the government agent could authenticate the texts because he himself had cut and pasted the texts from the computer screen into a Word document. And in Reeve v. Vinney, the Ninth Circuit appellate bankruptcy case, two employees of American Express were unable to authenticate the credit card records, where the first employee could not accurately describe the computer records process, and the second employee did not outline his qualifications or familiarity with the process that he outlined. Moreover, the court held in that case, while choosing not to admit those exhibits, that the answers by the affidavit and the testimony at trial were conclusory at best.
Are you arguing for that 901 is not adequate as a rule? Is your position saying adopt a new rule, or just that your view of 901 as look as observed through the lens of these other cases indicates that it wasn't met in this case?
Chief Judge Baker, I have two responses to that question. First, I believe that 901B9 illustrates how you meet the standard put forward in 901A.
So you're happy with the law?
Yes, sir. And also, the cases that illustrate how this is applied, I see that my time has expired.
Please finish your second point.
Yes, Your Honor. The cases that illustrate how this is applied outline the problems with computerized generated data evidence, talk about the powerful effect of that evidence on the members, all illustrate that the burden must be met, that the process is accurate and reliable.
Thank you.
Counsel, I just wanted one question to ask you, and that is, with respect to the question that Judge Stuckey asked about authentication and the information required for the members to have in this case, assuming that the judge in this case correctly decided the issue of authentication, which you don't concede, where would then be the problem with the evidence that was presented at trial in terms of giving the members sufficient information for them to assess this evidence?
Senior Judge Efron, I think I have two responses to your question. First, conceding for the sake of argument that the military judge did not abuse her discretion on her predicate determination and the admissibility. She then erred when she did not require the government to meet their burden, which is to lay the appropriate foundation in front of the members who are the ultimate trier of fact.
Where are you getting that rule from?
Lorraine v. Markle, and from the Fourth Circuit, a case known, I don't have the case name, but it references a case out of the Fourth Circuit.
But we're in our rules. We're in our rules. We're in our cases. Is there any new twist for 901 that's different from other decisions about admissibility by the judge? Then the government has to make the same proof in front of the members, even though they don't get to decide the question.
In its analysis of 104A and 104B, Lorraine v. Markle, I think, has your answer, Judge Ryan, and that is that ordinarily, when you're talking about ordinary questions of admissibility, say for hearsay or something like that, a military judge can make a predicate determination under 104A. However, under authentication, which is a conditional relevance type question, the evidence itself must go before the ultimate trier of fact. The military judge is charged with making the predicate determination as to whether or not
this... Are you saying that's the case in every case with respect to everything that's authenticated, or only for things like a contract, for example, where whether it's an actually authentic contract, the whole case turns on? Because I'm not sure. I know that there's a limited exception in limited number of cases for the point that you're making, and it's reflected in one of our later rules, okay? But I don't know that that's an across-the-board rule.
Judge Ryan, Pearl's position is that when you're dealing with a question of conditional relevance, such as authenticity, that evidence must be laid out in front of the members so that they themselves may make a determination as to whether or not this is what it purports to be, and if so, how much weight to give it. If the government had brought a witness from NMCI who said, we have safeguards, this system is ironclad, it is perfect, the members may have given this evidence extremely strong weight. However, without that, the members didn't have the opportunity, in this case, with no evidence placed in front of them as to this authentication, to make that determination themselves.
And did the defense object at trial on the grounds that the evidence of authentication was not presented to the members? Not talking here about the adequacy of the evidence, but again, assuming, which you're not conceding, that the judge in this case ruled correctly as a preliminary matter. Did the defense object to the introduction of the evidence on the grounds that it was not there was no authentication evidence presented to the members?
The short answer is no, Your Honor. Once the military judge admitted these documents and said to the members, I have admitted Prosecution Exhibits 19 and 23 in evidence, there was no further objection regarding those documents.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel. Case is now submitted, and we'll stand in recess until 10:15. Thank you.
All rise. Court stands in recess until 10:15.